This is February 24th, and the next meeting will be on March 17th, 1991, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Well, then, my friends, good morning.
Good morning.
I would like to try to bring what is happening in the world into some kind of point of reference so that you can feel the possible usefulness of all of the pain, anxiety that is going on at this time. I think it is very easy for any group of people in any point in time in history to forget that there is a definite place within the ebb and flow of historical fact and life and reality in which they fit. It isn't as if, my friends, you just kind of fell here from somewhere and said, well, I think I'll try that, and I hope it works, and I hope it's a lot of fun. And, you know, it's just not quite like that. And the whole day today, I would like to put all of this in reference from, if we could put it this way, the divine point of view. Whatever your views on or what's happening in the world are your own, and we tried to point out last month that those ideas are going to be different according to who you are, your background, your training, so on and so on. And your opinion is your own, and you're welcome to it. What we would like to do is present, if we could, use the word, the vaster point of view wherein all of this fits, in the greater scheme of things. In order to do so, we have to place it, and if you, in your mind, if you could go back and remember those things that you have either remembered through past life recognition or through historical studies or just having had it crammed in your head as a student in school, whichever was your choice there, that there is at the beginning, you will see that this globe, as history has unfolded in your era of time-space, as a group of isolated consciousness, all of you across the globe, very much isolated, not aware of each other, very little communication from point to point. And as you begin to study history, in not so much in its right and wrong, which is entirely a subjective point of view, but rather what is happening, you will begin to get a sense that from the God side of it, there is always the yearning that this planetary consciousness is moving more from isolation of the person to vaster and vaster conglomerates of energy and power that they can love. Understand this, the purpose of this planet is love. And any way that you can feel and express and move love out into the universe should be absolutely honored without any exception. And as you begin to understand that it is all about love, then you have to take all of your ideas about the war and so on and say, all right, help me see that in the reference point of love and what it's all about. Understand, God, if you want to talk about it this way, God's delight is the expansion of love into ever greater parts of consciousness. And as you begin in the early times of this planet, you will see that that was not so, at least in your recorded history of time. It was not so. And slowly but surely, the hearts and minds of man in various ways went out and began to cover the globe. You began to begin, if I could put it this way, to love greater groups of people. As simply as that. Do you understand? You began to love a greater sphere of people. You began to feel that there were more of you that your heart could fit into. Now, of course, the difficulty with love is that one of the qualifications, if you're looking at it from a human egotistic point of view, that love has to arise if they agree with you. I would like to say that again. Love arises when people agree with you. And if you have noticed very carefully, one of the best ways to get rid of a lover is to start disagreeing over and over again. How many of you lose your children when you disagree? How many of you lose your parents when you disagree? You see. So looked at from the human side of things, there is this necessity to have this ongoing agreement. Another way of talking about this wonderful expansion is that you have greater and greater numbers of people that you find you can agree with. and that you feel at ease with, that your heart relaxes around, so that you don't feel this tension around you and other, us and they. All those boundaries just fuzz out and become sweet and gentle. And you have then the feeling of oneness in a much vaster scheme of things. Please understand, my friends, if you ever begin to feel that love is not maximum in your life in some way with someone, some group, some idea, whatever it might be, your job, whatever, please go back into yourself and ask yourself, where in you has this arisen? What is it in you that has begun to differ? Where have you begun to find the differences between yourself and other rather than the similarities? So, from the divine point of view, all of this expansion is what absolutely this planet is all about. It's about the expansion of love, and the more places that you can expand it into, the greater the force of love that covers this planet, the greater the potential for future love for the planet, and you see how then it will go. So, when you begin to understand deeply that all of those people who are now in that part of the world that you call the Middle East, and you begin to understand just on a very basic level, as they begin to interact, for example, the Saudi Arabians with the Americans, with the British, with the Italian, I understand there's some from South America, whatever, whatever. Do you understand the potential for understanding? And when understanding is in place, agreement is possible and love can arise. Do you understand the process? And so, forgetting all of the right, wrong, if you can get into a sense of the feeling of how wondrous this is going to be, because when you look at it very clearly, the Middle East and all of those countries have represented to you and you to them a very closed system. Do you understand? Your system is not like their system. And, of course, they feel theirs is superior, and I imagine you do as well. So but it's based on very little understanding. I don't mean textbook understanding. This is, yes, I understand the 16 or 100 rules of this and this, and I understand, and, I understand. Those are mental understandings, and they do nothing to move the heart. The kinds of things that moves hearts are when two of them or more are gathered in some kind of a grouping down under extremities of war and the coming of war and all of the fears that are very natural, normal, and human and exist in all mankind. There is going to become a union of idea. They are going to begin to go, aha! This is not a Saudi. This is a person. And the other side, the Saudi say, well, this is an American. This is something else. There's a humanity. It is only when, if I could put it this way, and I hope you understand what I mean, it's only when the physical bodies get together that understanding starts. All right? Now, I mean that absolutely literally, because the faculty of understanding another person's point of view is not in the mind. You could all sit here in theory and agree with many, many different points of view. In actual fact, this would not make you feel that you had any love for the people. It would not feel you drawn into their set of understanding. It would not give you a space so that you could clearly have a, not a mental knowing, but a knowing within, that there were similarities. This kind of coming together brings the similarities out. Do you see? Instead of the great differences, it gives the opportunity for similarities. Now, when this war is finished, you will also begin to find something very interesting, which is that those of the Americans at all of the so-called one side are going to be left, various ones, in certain positions to live in those countries, to begin to understand, to begin to live in a different tone within their consciousness. And they all, in turn, as this begins to be a wonderful blending pot of consciousness, they are going to be able to influence those two spheres of consciousness which now stand so far apart. They are going to be able, simply by their mutuality, their love, their care, their concern, their understanding of similarities, to be able to begin to break out of all the limited boundaries. Now, I will be very frank. This is not the maximum way to bring this kind of thing about. And I am by no means raising the flag of war here and saying that God wants war so that you can all love. I think that that would be one of the most asinine statements one could make, is that one, you know, has war in order to bring about love. But I want you to understand, we have said it from the first year that we met, God uses anything that you create. Anything that you create is absolutely usable for God awareness to begin to do what it needs to do, which is to permeate as many parts of consciousness with a quality of love that unites this planet in some kind of knowing oneness. That is the point of the God experiment. How you choose to do it has been your choice. How you choose to have this happen has been your choice, not you just in this room, please understand, but mankind as a whole. And I want you to really understand the beauty of this. Because as you begin to understand that no matter what contrivance, no matter how diabolical, no matter how dark, no matter how painful, in your life as well as other, the same basic law applies. Whatever the drama and the war in your life, and you are not separate from drama and war, are you? If you are aware, your lives are filled with drama and wars of a different nature, but nevertheless, they are in place in your life. And as the law applies for the wholeness of consciousness, so does it apply always in the intimacy of your own life. Wherever there is any kind of separation of warlike dramatic action taking place in your thoughts, in your feelings, and so on, the same law applies, my friends. That very moment is absolutely usable for the God source within. Absolutely. And I would like to tell you something we've said before. It needs to be said again. Many of you have identified yourselves with what you call your ego, or another word, your small self. Now, that small self, as we've said, we've talked about it in many different ways, but in truth, the very unglamorous thing about your ego or your small self is that it's simply a conglomerate, it's a coming together, it's a cluster of different beliefs that you have. Now, that's not very romantic. You see, it's not eternal. Your ego doesn't have the eternality of verities, of the truths. Do you understand? It's a coming together, almost, if you don't mind my using this word, haphazard coming together of ideas and beliefs. I believe this. At the same moment you believe this, you believe the opposite of it. In very different circumstances, again and again, when you begin to pursue watching your belief structure, you run right into the knowledge that you have many, many beliefs, and a lot of them don't agree with each other at all. Now, I hate men, I love my husband. Women are asinine, I love you, my darling. You know, how you know, the mind goes in very different ways. And what I'm trying to ask you to remember, this is old teaching, but let's go back to it again, that when you begin to understand that this ego that you are fighting so valiantly to protect the rights of, it's my right, I have the right to do it, give me my space, this is my idea, this kind of thing, what are you defending? If you're worried about what you're defending over there in the middle of the desert, what are you defending right here? What are you defending each time you get your war machine going? You know, what are you defending? You're defending a very, very strange thing, which let's go over again. Let us again re-remember what is this ego that you are defending. It is a loosely knit conglomerate of coming together of vortexes of energy that are belief structures. And they are very, very loose. And they are changeable in an instant, are they not? All you have to do is to find one piece of information that you didn't have, and this long-held belief that you would have died for just evaporates. And you have a totally different point of view. Oh, well, I didn't know that. Well, then I'll take away my money, or I'll divorce you, or whatever. You know, these are very volatile things. The understanding here, and please, I want you to hear the difference here. There is no key center point to your ego structure. There is no great center of ego structure that says, all right, we're going to go to the right now, we're going to go to the left, where we're going is straight on to God. There is no structure within that ego that directs the ego. Do you understand? It's like the clouds in the sky. It's exactly like the clouds in the sky, and that is the definition of your ego. And you are defending to the death of your love affairs, to your friendships, to your children, to your parents, to whatever your jobs. You're defending clouds in the sky because they change constantly. And not only from moment to moment, but from lifetime to lifetime, you know you are a conglomerate of many clouds, many of which you are not aware of. You know, you come full of clouds. You know, you just don't come like a bright sky and just get reborn and then begin to build. There are many trace patterns of clouds that come with you. But the important point here is the reason that ego is not really very useful in the all-over strain of things is there's no unifying nucleus in it that says, go this way. God is this way. God is this way. Or even peace is this way, or pleasure is this way. There is no thing in there that directs it. So it goes this way, and then that way, and then this way, and then that way. And you are in motion all of the time, swayed by inner and outer clouds. Some come up and bump against you, and you say, oh, I believe. Others just come in very quietly and influence you day after day after day. Finds, I believe. You know, there are all kinds of ways to have this ego cluster influence, both from the inside and from the outside. So what I want you to understand, the very fragile and unpredictable and inconsistent nature of ego motion, which is why when you begin to move out of being motivated just by ego, you begin to really experience things that are vaster. You really begin to experience a state of equilibrium. The ego and its manifestations does not give a state of equilibrium. That's not its job. Its job is to keep moving. Its job is to keep moving, ever moving, because the ego has a great belief in motion. You know, now, it never tells you it's not going anywhere particular. It doesn't tell you it doesn't have one focused destination in mind. It doesn't reveal this to you until you wake up one morning and think, what have I been doing? What was all that about, you see? Because there was... So, where then do you go to get that focus that is absolutely what you want for your peace of mind and heart, and to, if in your, perhaps some of your ways of talking about it, to place your feet firmly on the road to God? How then to do this? All right, let us go back again to the analogy of the sky and the clouds within the sky. All right, now, the clouds are present, and the sky, the empty, vast sky, is, in our way of talking about it today, that God self, that great mind of consciousness, that pure conscious awareness that you have come to call God. All right? And it is that immensity that just silently, majestically is what it is, that allows all of the coming and goings. You can have the greatest thunderstorm ever created within the clouds, and the sky is not affected. It is out of the sky that the power illumines. My friends, listen. How do you think you would see the clouds if it were not for the illumination from the sky? How do you see them? You see them not because the clouds themselves have an illumination that presents itself to you, but because there is some kind of reflected light. Do you understand? It's this reflected light of God consciousness, which is this magnificent, magnificent wholeness of sky. Big, vast, ever-present sky. It has within itself the luminosity of light. No light is needed for this vast sky of consciousness. It doesn't have to have a light outside of itself, because as you begin to get closer and closer, and some of you in this room have had wondrous experiences with the light and what it is, and you realize that the light doesn't get its light from someplace else. Somehow, magically, the light is within the light. It is within the consciousness. Consciousness is luminescent light. That's what it is. And it doesn't have to go to another power source to have that illumination. It is within it. It is its wondrous being. So when you begin to sense that You, if I could put it this way, are this vast, cloudless sky of consciousness. And begin to imagine, please, we've asked you again and again, bring all of your equipment in. You have an imagination. I think if there's only one thing I would really change, well, that's not really true at all. I shouldn't speak myself. One of the things that I would definitely change in the way human consciousness is raised is the defamation over the importance of your visualizations. Oh, it's just an idea. Oh, it's just a dream. Oh, it's just a fantasy. Oh, you just made it up. Oh. It's one of the greatest faculties that you have, this ability to visualize something deeply, to visualize deeply out of your own consciousness and to hold that visualization so that you can become more sure of it, more firm with it, so that it can have a greater, vaster place in your psyche. So when you begin to envision yourself as this vast sky, magnificent, do you not begin to feel something? Please let me know. As you begin to identify in this moment, into the vastness of sky, do you get any sense of anything for yourself? I'm asking. Yes. Now, the ego says, you're just making that up. That's all stories. You know, that's what everybody, you know, it's just a story. You'll forget it. The reality is the clouds. The reality is the clouds. Clouds are real. Vast sky is not. Now, the way to access this kind of openness, so simply stated, is to begin to get a sense of two things. One, the ever-changing flux of your own ego ideas. When you begin to really pay attention to your ideas as they come and go in your day, you will get the sense that although you are thinking, here we go, although you are thinking, there is no thinker. Although you are thinking, there is no thinker. Although you are acting, there is no actor. Now, half of you in the room say, I don't even understand that, and I don't want to, all right? And that's all right, that's absolutely all right. So be it. But let's just throw that into the possibility. Because, my friends, really, when you begin to really meditate within, not in the serious sense of meditation, but just to begin to meditate, ruminate, to cast your view within yourself, to ask yourself, have you ever really found a thinker? Now, I grant you have a brain. But what motivates the brain? Where do ideas come from? Where do beliefs arise from? What's really going on? You see, now, as you begin to get introspective about these things, you'll realize that many of you in your pursuit toward God consciousness are trying to find a person, a thinker, a doer. Now, you don't really want to find a thinker or a doer, my friends. You don't really. Because if you do, then you will have to begin to do such things as to judge. Well, if this is a thinker, is it a good thinker or is it a bad thinker? Is it a good actor or a bad actor? When you get locked in on those concepts, you are stuck. What we're asking you to breathe into your awareness today, if possible, for those of you that are ready for a new kind of opening, is that there is no thinker, there is no actor, but what there is, yes, thank you, what there is a very definite conglomerate of belief structures stuck together that you think of as acting in unison that you call you. This is me. This is me. Now, confusion arises because there is a body there. And you have, for all of these years, said, this is, the body is me. The body is me. Well, is it? If that is true, then when body finishes and dissolves or gets burned up at the burning ghats along the Ganges, then where are you? Where are you then? Where is the you that was so identified with that structure? I'm asking for a lot of stretch this morning. And some of you may decide it's too big a stretch, it gives you a headache, and you may never want to come back again. And that's all right. But we have to, in the time we have left, to bring the truth to its finest point that we can present in a way that will begin to truly liberate you, to truly liberate you from those things that impinge on you and cause you pain and ongoing sorrow. There is a wonderful moment of delight when you realize that that which you have decided and called you is nothing more than an ever-changing, ever-shifting conglomerate of beliefs that can be changed at any time. If this were not so, then you are stuck the way you are forever. Do you want that? Is this what you want forever? This kind of understanding? And you know that's not true. So you have to realize, as you begin to view this, and I ask those of you that are serious about this, to really think on it in the next few weeks. One moment, please. Your first response might be fearful. Oh my God, if there's no real thing in there, then who am I? If there's no person in there, if there's no thinker, if there's no doer, then who am I? Where am I? Where am I in all this? All right, stop and say, are you here? Ask yourself, who's asking this question? Is somebody asking the question? Yes. Well, then something's there. How? Do you understand? You have to turn the whole thing back. If you're saying, my God, where am I? Where? Who am I? Then say, who is asking that absurd question? The person asking the question thinks it's a person. It's not a person. I'm asking you to move off of identifying that who the questioner, quit defining it as a person, as a persona, as an ongoing whatever. And I'd like to suggest another word. I'd like for you to begin to call it the mysterious, the unknown. Do you understand? When you put a name on things, they're locked into all of your understandings. They arise out of that. But when we move out of the realm of word, when we just say, wait a minute, who's asking the question? Is there anybody here? When you wake up in the morning, you don't say, oh my God, am I here? You might say, oh my God, why am I here? And I wish I weren't here. But you do not arise and say, there's nobody here. It never happens. Now, I'm trying to point out that the misidentification of the nucleus, am I reaching? Yes. The misidentification of the nucleus is what's causing the confusion. When you say, there's somebody here, you identify that somebody as this nucleus of belief structure called ego. I'm trying to tell you that that is not the definition. That is not truth. That is not truth. What you are, and the one that asks the question, the one that is aware of something, is this mysterious, unnameable, yet totally knowable consciousness called pure conscious awareness that is ever present, ever present, ever present. It is instant awareness. It is constantly present. And that is the part of the awareness that's asking the question. It has nothing to do with the ever-changing things that move within the self that you would call your limited self. Now, people come to me and they say, I get on this path and I work and I work and I do everything I'm supposed to do. I eat the right foods. I don't do those bad things. I do all those good things, whatever that list is for them. It's very interesting the different lists people have. But nevertheless, they're doing their best and they're reading and they're meditating and they're praying, whatever. And they say, I'm not getting anywhere. I can't move anything. And as we begin to get very quiet in those situations, what we come to really realize is that they are using all of their learning experiences, all of their training of themselves and all of the teachings, and they are placing them as ideas into their ego structure. Now, let me explain what I mean. I know I'm going way out for some of you. Just hopefully we'll get back to where we began. All right. Placing ideas. You sit down, you read a book. The book says, the light of God is alive within your heart now. You put down the book. Right. The light of God is alive within my heart now. Finished. And you say, I know that. I know that. Nothing has changed. I know that. Now, What is the problem? The problem is, we've talked about this before, that the ego's greatest delight with you is to give you some of the greatest truths possible, and you just take them as ideas and stick them in your ego conglomerate and with great arrogance, perhaps, I know, and put it in there, and you forget about it. You never take the next step, which is this. The next step is any truth that you honestly resound with in your mind when you first hear it. It is your indication that you need to take that and make it your own inside of you, moment after moment, day after day, year after year. Just the hearing of the truth does not set you free. If it did, you would all have been free long ago. So it is not the hearing of the truth that brings the freedom. What is it? It is the making it your own. And you make it your own by becoming excited about it when you read it. You know, some of you have some extraordinary experiences reading things. Your ears start to hum and sounds around your head. Truly, I can see it clearly. And then close the book and, oh, that was nice. That was nice. Finished. So the way is when you become inspired. You know, God inspires constantly. It inspires through the external word, through things you say to each other, through ideas, many, many ways, through dreams, through vision, whatever it is, through fear, through sorrow, always. And when you feel that inspiration, that is the statement in your physical body that somehow you and that statement are joined. People come to me and they say, is the Course in Miracles real or not? The Course in Miracles inspires those that it inspires, and inspires them beautifully. Other people read the same book, nothing. Does this then mean that there's something faulty with the Course? Is there something faulty with the person who's reading the Course? None of that is true. You are inspired in your own ways, and your main responsibility to move from the point of seeker to the point of finder is to acknowledge those things that make you light up. And if it's only one sentence, then take it. Eat it. Swallow it. Chew it. Be with it. Become a part of it. Run it through your awareness moment after moment. Try to put it into the vast sky of your being rather than into one of the cloud structures. And you can do this easily by just, we've talked again, just dropping back away from the clouds back into the sky. You move instantly back in. It's not a great motion. You just simply can move at any moment back into that which is the peace and quiet of your being. It's not difficult. Your ego has told you it is. It's not true. It is very simple. As you begin to understand this, things begin to relax around you. And then the power of the vast empty sky then begins to fill you with a new way. It then begins to empower you directly through whatever this sentence or body of information was that excited you. One of the worst things about what is called the Bartholomew work is there's too much of it. There's just too much of it. Because in having so much of it, one can go from month to month to month to month, say, all right, I'll do that idea. Oh, I like that idea. I like that idea. And the end, you have no idea. Because you have gone from idea to idea to idea. Now, we have said this before. We will say it again. It would be very helpful if you would find those parts of this body of work that really excite you, that really empower you, that really make you want to deepen your awareness of that part of it. And in so doing, begin to make it your own. I said the one thing you must never say is, Bartholomew says. That is a nothing statement. It has no meaning. It has no necessity. The important question is, what do you say? What do you say? That is what changes things. What do you say? nothing special up here. What do you say? It is through your consciousness moving through your physical body that moves out into the world that makes the changes that change this planet. That's where the changes come. Not from all this prattling from wherever, all through this, no. It's when you take whatever prattling is interesting to you, move it through the consciousness, make it yours in your own way, become very, very clear about its meaning, and then when you speak from that point of creative power that moves out and makes whatever you say true. And other people will go, that's true. Their mind may be saying, oh, that's nonsense, but some part of them goes, that feels right. The mind says, don't be silly. The body says, that feels true. How does that happen? It happens when you have taken that marvelous responsibility of finding out those threads in all of this webbing that really are your inspiration. If there are none of them in this work, then please, by all means, go and find some place where they are. But when you begin to have that inner excitement that whatever has excited you, even partially, in your all of your seekings, that is the one that your being, your past, if we want to talk about your karmic past, however you want to talk about it, is calling you. You know, there is such a thing as God calls people. Now, we talk that way, and people get very upset because they think, well, maybe God will forget to call me. You know, maybe on Tuesday at 5 o'clock, God will be busy, and that was my time, and it won't happen. You know, so no call from God. This luck. All right. In truth, my friend, God is calling you all the time. How do you receive a call of God? Now, there are some of you, obviously, who get it with trumpets and banners and flashes of light and so on, and you're so stunned that you know this is real. This is real. But you know, my friends, that's not the usual case. And even on those people who have had those flashes, much of the rest of it is very ordinary. Much of it is very much like what you have to deal with all the time, which is, how does God inspire you in your life? I would really ask you in the weeks ahead to ask yourself that question. How does God inspire you in your life? What are the kinds of ways that God can get you? What are the kinds of things that bring you closer to that? And as you begin to look at your life, many of you will find, again, I'm sorry, but many of you will find a lot of it is not like that. A lot of it is not inspiring. A lot of it is dead and boring. Even some of the highest teachings can become very boring. Some of the highest teachings are boring because they do not excite you. I don't care how high the teaching, if it doesn't have a bell sounding in your consciousness, it is not going to change you. It is not going to make any change whatsoever. So the responsibility is the delight of listening to the sounding of those bells. And they go off all the time. If you'll just be alive to the excitement that the bells are ringing for you all around, and just become aware. And as you look at your life, what are those things that bring you tedium and boredom and so forth? You say, well, my job brings me tedium and boredom and I want out. All right. I understand that. How do you get out of tedium and boredom without, you know, losing your income, your mortgage, your car, payments to your children? How do you do this? Just a few sentences are really all that's needed. If there is anything in your life that is a real block, obstacle to your finding the God within, and when you begin to examine your life and you find such an obstacle, when you begin to identify it very clearly and say, this is dead, this is finished, it's no longer for me. Instead of scurrying around trying to find out how to get out of it, I want you please to take some time to sit down and say, what would I have in its place? You can begin seated quietly in your apartment to begin to generate a total life change process by simply sitting and allowing yourself to dare to create beliefs and ideas of things that you yearn for and want. Your yearning is the beginning of your future. Your yearnings are what end up as things down the line. Whatever you have in your life, whether you are aware of the yearning or not, when it comes to you and you begin to yearn for something, know if you are yearning for it, however frightened or confused you might be, it's yours. Some part of it is yours. Do you see that? What kind of a God is it that says, hey, I want all of you to yearn and yearn, and I will never give you what you want? If that's your kind of God, get another God. That is a very inferior God. And has nothing to do with a consciousness that is really God awareness. The minute that you become aware of your yearnings, from the simplest to the highest, from the most ordinary to the most ecstatic, when you become aware of that and begin to build your yearning for it, then the way starts. Your mind isn't going to clear the way. Have you found that out? Your mind isn't going to clear the way. And if you keep waiting, remember again, the ego cluster. Where does power come from? Where does focus come from? It does not come from the cluster of your ego consciousness. So we're back to where we started. I hope I haven't left too many of you on the sidelines here. But that cluster has no motivating force. The yearning is not in the cluster. The yearning is in the sky. The yearning, I'm not talking about today I want tea and tomorrow I want coffee and today I want ice cream. I'm not talking about that. That's desire coming and going. There's a lot of difference between desire and yearning. A desire can change any moment, moment to moment. Yearnings rise up. Don't you feel them? Yearnings rise up out of the deepest part of you. They just come up and they fill you, and you can't get away from them. You may fly to the other part of the country, and the yearning goes on. You know, other things maybe should this and that, but the yearning is there. Acknowledge that. That yearning is it. The yearning is the voice of God, trying to move you from one position to a more open position. I've told you, left to itself, consciousness always moves toward greater and greater bliss, greater and greater love, greater and greater awakening. If you have a yearning, I don't mean a desire, a yearning, that is God calling to you, and I ask you to pay attention. How else can God find you? How else? Sometimes through other people, but mostly, my friends, it is through you. It is through those yearnings that keep transcending all of the limitations, in spite of all of the doubts, in spite of all of the things that your reality says to you, you can't have that, you can't have that. The yearning goes on. The yearning is there. That's God calling. Pay attention. You are not responsible for figuring out how it's going to happen. You are responsible for allowing yourself to get very, very big with this feeling. Allowing the feeling of the yearning to become very, very big within you. To have a great, deep intimacy with you. People talk a lot about intimacy these days. And in fact, my friends, intimacy is something you do with yourself. Out of that intimacy with yourself, there are no boundaries outside so that you can feel intimate in the presence of other. But someone who feels intimate with themselves, and this is why nobody goes for this one, they feel intimate with everyone. You see, it's not that intensity. This is mine. This is my intimacy. When you begin to be intimate with yourself, when you begin to know your yearnings, when you begin to acknowledge those and to know who you are your yearnings. Whose are they? They're yours. They're part of that sky. They're not part of the conglomerate that ever changes. Yearnings, some of you have had yearnings since the day you came to this planet. Some of you were born with the yearning for God consciousness. Some of you were born with it. It ran you around when you were little. It's a yearning. It comes from the soul. It comes from your being. It is a definition of who you are. Find out what you yearn for and you will know who you are. Not what you desire. What do you yearn for? You will know who you are. In that moment. And it's frightening. A real yearning that comes from somewhere. And you look at it and think, I can't follow this yearning. I follow this yearning, all my past life is going to be a disaster. My friends, I want to tell you, God never said it didn't have the ability to explode things in order to move you on. If it is time to move on to something, the explosion will happen. And it is best that you be aware of it and have the joy as you fly through the air. All right. There are many, many, many parts of you. And for one phase in your life, you had a certain yearning. And then you have fulfilled that yearning. And probably, if you come to a place like this on a day like this, you probably did it well. Whether your standard would say so or not may not be true. But I would say, from this point of view, you probably did it very well. You gave it your heart. You gave it your being. You gave it your whole life. And then when that is finished, when another yearning takes its place, and you have to realize that the appropriateness for the new will find its way. That somehow, that what was old, part of it perhaps can be brought into the new, perhaps not. That's not your concern. All that you can do is live as close to your yearnings as you can, to be as honest with yourself about them, and to live out of that true center. That is your true center. Do you understand? That is the center of your being. And the next step always manifests with overwhelming yearning. This is what I must have. And then all of a sudden, because these are yearnings that come out of the clear sky, they have with them the continuance of the great sky. They have the center, which is the great sky. They have the one focus which will get you to that goal, because they come from the great sky. That is the focus of the consciousness. The desires of the ego are capricious and rise and fall as fast as your breath. But those that come from the groundswell of being, which is the God self of all, that reflect with the luminescent wonder of the sky of consciousness, they continue until you and that yearning find a way to make it happen. You will find a way. You are not responsible for the thinking of your way through it. That comes later. You are responsible for bringing the magnificent wonder of that yearning fully into your being. You embrace it. You bring it close to you. You allow yourself to feel and know the potential of a new yearning, which brings a new life. That's what this is all about. People say to me, God only comes through sorrow. Not true, my friends. God comes through yearning. Deep, abiding yearning. If you have a yearning, please know there is a way to fulfill it. You have to take your mind off of it, because the mind says, oh no, I can't do that, it's got to look this way, but I can't do all this, and then we're back in the cluster. We're back in that ever-changing cluster. When you just allow, acknowledge, I have this yearning, I feel this yearning, I'm allowing myself to feel this amazing yearning. Out of that, you begin to empower the yearning from the power of the vastness that surrounds it, and you begin to see your way. It may be one moment, one day, a next moment, one foot. What do you care? One day you feel inspired to take on a child. Past all yearning, past all thoughts. I never thought this. Here's child. Why? Because it's important. Because that's the next step. I'm asking you to trust your yearnings. Live with them. Abide with them. Make them full. Make them real. Give them power. And in so doing, you know the basic law of consciousness. Knock and it will open. I will tell you, if you have a definition in your mind of a God that would inspire you with yearning and turn the back of reality on you for its coming into the world, get yourself another God. That is not the way consciousness is. If it's there, if it's you, it is you, and there will be a way. I would like to thank you all for coming today. I ask you to be at peace in your hearts over all that is going on. To please remember that from the God side of things, the love of mankind is moving out across the globe. And if the first footsteps are war, they will not be the last footsteps. There will be softer, gentler footsteps that follow. This is not an event outside of time, space, only brought about by chaos and confusion. There is nothing created by human consciousness that the power of God consciousness cannot use for its own end, and there is but one end, and that is total love manifesting in each one of you, for each one of you on this planet. Nothing short of that is going to suffice. That is the goal of this planet. And it will go on in one form or another until that is complete. So please, it's important for you to understand the importance of what's happening and to hold in your heart and mind the view from a higher watch. Please, be a part of that part of it. The more that you do that, the sooner the ending time. Do you want to help stop fear, pain, war? Just love more. Find every way you can to move into more love, whatever that means to you, my friends. Whatever it takes, that is the goal. And it's a worthy one. Think about this planet radiating nothing but love. Do you understand what an incredible constellation of power that will be in this universe? Do you feel the changes that can be made in and around consciousness with this kind of vortex of energy pulsating not with quiet love, but conscious love? Do you sense the destiny? And you're a part of it. You picked it. You were wise to pick it. I suggest you do it. For those of you that would wish, we will have a meditation. And thank you.
Before leaving this morning, we have several announcements we would like to share with you. The first is bad news and good news. The bad news is that there are no more personal readings with Bartholomew. And the good news is there are no more personal readings with Bartholomew. This was Bartholomew's decision based on a winding down of this experiment in the next several years. He has stated that it is time for us to begin applying those things that we've learned from him in our personal lives and our relationships. I know this is a hard decision to accept for those people who have been waiting for a reading for quite a long time. And it is our wish and our hope that you can see this as a positive choice. Positive in the sense that Bartholomew is confident that we do have the tools that we need at the present time.
This is Mary Margaret, and the next announcement concerns this summer tour. As you probably anticipated, the tour to Turkey has been canceled due to TWA no longer flying into Istanbul. So we have selected the islands of Bali and Java
primarily on Bali, and the tour dates are June 25th to July 9th. We picked Bali because of its incredible beauty and spiritual quality, plus a magnificent artistic wonder there with all the people. It's said to be one of the most spiritual spots on the globe. And Java we selected because of the site of Borobudur, which is the Mahayana Buddhist site there is world-renowned. And so the few days that we're on Java, one of those highlights will be an early morning sunrise trip out to the temple with Bartholomew mini workshop there, we hope, at the top of the temple site. The things on Bali, they have beautiful sacred sites, small villages, with each one with a different artistic bent, jewelry or wood carving or batik. We are going to be at the beaches for a few days, lakesides. We're going to be ancient caves and some hermitages and wilderness travel who took us to Peru and to Ecuador will be our host, and they are magnificent. On Java, they have this incredibly exotic bazaar, plus a very large art, antique and batik outlets for those of you who are interested in that side of things. So, the total land and air cost from Los Angeles to Bali, return Los Angeles, is $3,369. If you're interested, please, if you want to get the total itinerary, please write to us at P.O. Box 1656, Taos, New Mexico, 87571. If you've decided on the basis of this that you want to go, and time is of the essence here, please, to secure your place, send a check to Friends of Vista Grande for $1,110, sent to the address given above. If you cannot reach us, because we will be out of town for 10 days, starting the 1st of March until the 11th of March, please call Mike Myers at Rio Grande Travel in Albuquerque. His telephone number, 1-505-345-8781. He arranges all of the air, and he will be able to tell you anything you need to know about this itinerary in case you can't reach us. We also suggest that you contact Mike Myers about your airfare from your city to Los Angeles, because we have been able to secure some very good prices for that part of the journey. For those of you that are interested in coming, we'd love to have you. Our experiences, we expand and we enjoy. And Bartholomew is our guest every day that we can find an appropriate place for this. And so we hope to hear from some of you. Thanks a lot.
The last announcement this morning has to do with the Taos Summer Workshops. We would like to begin by stating that whichever workshop you select, please do come prepared to experience silence and meditation segments up to 20 minutes each. We are going to incorporate walking as well as seated meditation this year. Okay, we have two workshops, June 8th and 9th, 1991. This is called Create Your Reality Workshop. Using techniques from various disciplines and Bartholomew's own explanations, this exploration of reality will include writing exercises, working in groups, and the creation of mandalas. The second workshop we're offering this summer will be August 17th and 18th. We've called that Integrating Ourselves and the Natural World. Bartholomew often tells us we are missing out on a lot of peace, beauty, and comfort when we ignore the physical world. In this workshop, he will assist us in dissolving those false barriers that our mind has created in seeing ourselves as separate from anything we perceive to be outside ourselves. This includes both Bartholomew and God. The cost of each workshop is $175 with a $75 deposit. To register for the workshop of your choice, send a deposit along with your name, address, and phone number to me, Joy Franklin, P.O. Box 2996, Taos, New Mexico, 87571. And we will use your postmark to fill the workshops on a first-come, first-served basis. You will be notified of confirmations immediately and receive the final information packet approximately 3 weeks before each workshop. And once again, if you cancel your reservation prior to 2 weeks before the workshop and we can fill your space, we will return your deposit. Now, this year we are considering a sweat lodge on the mesa for both workshops. And this would depend on how many people have signed up for the sweat lodge. You know, if we have 40 people, that's quite a large amount, so we wouldn't be able to take all of those. But if we do get too many participants for the lodge, we will ask people to draw lots for their selection. Okay, both workshops are going to be held at the Branham Ranch in San Cristobal. This is a beautiful ranch 15 miles north of Taos. They have limited space for people to stay, and they do offer bed and breakfast facilities. Cost is $55 a day, and they will be doing very delicious vegetarian meals. Now, the accommodations and the meals at the ranch, reservations there need to be made through the ranch. In other words, you don't write to me to reserve space at the Branham Ranch. For reservations, call or write Mark or Nikki at the Branham Ranch. That's B-R-A-N-H-A-M. P.O. Box 220, San Cristobal, C-R-I-S-T-O-B-A-L, New Mexico, 87564. And their phone number is area code 505-776-2622. The accommodations and the meals will be available from Friday dinner prior to the workshop through Sunday lunch. And they are requesting that no one arrive earlier than 6 p.m. on Friday. So I believe that covers everything, and thank you very much.